Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Gina's going to tell us all about her difficult week and some of the official particulars that went on with her dad. We'll do March Madness Madness. We got Fitzdog joining us, so lots of show. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. IRS warning, new scam to steal electronic filing identification numbers from tax professionals over email. Tax pros should be aware of the latest phishing scams. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our info at risk on the internet. In an instant, cybercriminals could harm your finances and your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number, for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they will send you an alert. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours yours with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year at LifeLock.com. Promo code Adam. That's LifeLock.com. Promo code Adam for 25% off.
100,000 downloads in a day. Be among the first to hear season 2 of the American Nightmare podcast series, an incredible true crime case.
Sherry Crandall actually almost predicted her demise.
A nurse murdered inside her hospital. DNA, fingerprints, even an eyewitness haven't helped solve this case in 23 years. But now, two decades later, police say they may finally have their big break.
I'm DC crime reporter Paul Wagner. Join me for season 2 of an American Nightmare series, Murder in a Safe Place, a WTOP production. Subscribe today on Apple Podcasts.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Greg Fitzsimmons, with Gina Grad back on the news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and another round of March Madness Madness. And now, welcoming Gina back with open arms and potentially open pants, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We're going to manage to get it on now. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Ha, ha, ha. You're so gay.
All right, Gina. Well, let's talk about your odyssey here for a bit, yeah. And then we'll get into March Madness Madness.
Which, by the way, I am really looking forward to.
Thank you.
So we're just starting from the beginning and kind of roll through it. Tuesday evening, I was with Paola getting my hair done, Emmy's wife, who I love. Mm-hmm. And I saw these calls coming in, ringing, 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 and I had a bad feeling, as I always do when you see more than one call.
Did Paola get to open her salon, or do you have to do
yes.
it in a living room?
No, she got to be open, and God willing, it stays that way.
Oh,
I
good.
Love her salon.
Yes.
And so I was like, I gotta go. And she was just, of course, like amazing, and I ran out the door. And I drove, like, I was literally yelling out my window, like pulling up next to people in like the left lane and going like, roll down your window. I got to cut you off. And just, I mean, I got there in like a record time, unfortunately not in time.
Did you know it was up or like having, I mean, obviously you had an idea, but
when they told me he stopped breathing and that they were administering CPR and the medics have been called. So I get there and I see all these, you know, fire trucks, which I always find sort of confusing and comical. And I see, and I sort of pull into a space and I see medics lounging. And that's when I knew. So, and also I haven't been allowed in this facility because of COVID and I've been begging. And I went in and they told me I had just missed him. I froze in my tracks, started crying. I felt these hands sort of gently doing their best to like move me into a room so as not to like terrify, but I couldn't move. So I finally went in the room, and this was before my very dear friend and my fiance got there. So I was alone for a while, quite a while.
Were they letting you in because of the COVID restrictions had been reduced now?
They were letting me in because apparently there is a clause for a dead body.
Oh, yeah, so, makes sense.
It kind of makes sense, but it also is the opposite of makes sense, you know, if you think about
imagine
it.
Imagine getting there just before.
Yeah.
Right, and they go, you can't come in, or who are you going to give COVID to, but okay.
Yeah. You know, I did everything I could to get, I mean, when I got that shot, I was campaigning hard, and they didn't budge. So, and the week before that, he had gone into the hospital, a whirlwind night where he had to go to two different hospitals because of an insurance problem. I mean, it's just, and after that, it took a lot out of him.
So what was,
there was anything left.
What was this facility? Would it be?
Like a nursing home, like a care facility.
Okay.
And I was just about to put on the, you know, start the hospice process and all of that. Also, something that was sort of a secret, the only person who knew was my dad. I had been planning for the last month or so to get married in his room. Oh. And my dress came and he was the only one that knew, and he always loved having secrets from my mom because they're best friends. Like, well, does your mother know? Your mother always knows. So I never told her. I told her at the last minute, and I was like, mom still doesn't know. You got the drop on mom. And he died at 5, and our marriage license appointment was at 6.
That day.
So we missed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. I mean, the shit I have done in the last year and a half, I did not think I could do. I didn't imagine ever doing. I didn't think I'd be in this position. But at the end of the day, literally, it was just me and this body in the room. And, you know, I was holding his hands and his eyes are open. And he does not look great. He looks like somebody was trying to revive, you know, it is a jarring image. Mm-hmm. And they kept asking if I wanted to cover him. And I kept saying no. And I just kept saying I was so sorry. I did get one moment of comic relief, but nobody else laughed. Because I'm sitting here like sobbing over this body. And the cops walk in. Like there's two cops with like they're like all the radios and stuff. And like their mm-hmm. guns and shit. And I was like, can I help you? And they're like, hi, you know, we're here to... like basically do an investigation.
Big fans.
Yeah. And I went, I mean, I couldn't help it. I go, he wasn't like gunned down in the middle of a diamond heist.
I did it.
Yeah. I thought they were like investigating, like, how did this really happen? Like, do you think what do you think happened? But now obviously I understand that they want to make sure that, you know, he wasn't like smothered with a pillow or something. But at the time I was like, do we need to go through this?
What do they do? I mean,
I don't know because they asked me to step out of the room.
Take
a statement or something.
But, no, they. I'm not allowed to be in there while they're doing it. So wow. I don't know. Probably checking the body for trauma. I don't know.
Probably sign your death certificate or something. I don't know.
That's done by the doctor. And that was another problem, by the way. It is so exhausting planning this shit. I mean, I technically took one day off and it was yesterday because there is no, everyone's like, rest. I'm like, when? I'm sitting there and I'm, you know, someone finally comes in and I'm holding my dad's hand and I'm kind of talking to him. And she's like, I don't mean to interrupt, but which mortuary is coming?
Oh, you should have gone Neptune Society, Gina.
Oh, no. That was not Steve Grad's wishes. I thought about it.
Be a guy named Russ who would show up in his mom's country squire wagon and you wouldn't have time to shed a tear.
I thought about it.
He'd be deep six by now.
The Jews don't take kindly to that. So I found, you'll love this, Adam. I picked the first mortuary that came up in Van Nuys because that's apparently where all the mortuaries are in the valley.
Yeah.
And just had him picked up. I didn't know what to do. My friend, you know, showed up and fiance and they cleared out the room and I, you know, but I was alone and I put the sheet over his face and I'm just like, you know, it's kind of been him and me this whole time. And I would have been upset if somebody else was there. And the last two times I actually got to see him in person was the week before when he went to the, no, the week before when he was moved into this facility and it was very jovial. I mean, you wouldn't be able to tell, but I could. He couldn't talk and he couldn't move, but he was laughing and I was getting him to laugh and we were joking around and he tried to kiss me on the cheek and it was okay. I love you, whatever. And I was so happy that I got 20 minutes in the parking lot. I felt like a groupie. You just wait for the ambulance to pull up. And then the second time was after he came back from the hospital a few days before he died. And it was very different. We just stared at each other crying and he couldn't move, but he had tears, you know, coming down his face. And I just kept telling him how much I loved him. And I knew something was sort of, the wheels had started in motion. It was very cold outside. And I asked him, I'm like, okay, are you ready to go in? And he nodded his head, yes. But he turned his head and he just wanted to like take in the cars in the parking lot and look at the sky. And like, he just wanted to look around. And I kind of got the feeling like he knew he wouldn't be outside again. So that was the last time I got to see him in person. But
well, one of the scourges of this whole COVID thing is people cannot, we're not allowed to go into the facilities and say goodbye to their loved ones. I mean, imagine, you know, people don't really, it's not something we've really focused much on as in the news or as a society, but man, that is a big, big part of this.
Yeah.
Not being able to go say goodbye, to grieve, to, or the person being alone, essentially.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we should have fucking figured that one out. Should have given you a respirator or something. You know, if everything, you know, if the masks are effective, then the masks are effective. Like, you should have been able to go in.
I wish there was something I could sign saying, if I get COVID, I don't hold you responsible. I mean, it killed. That's why I talked to him like two or three times a day, because it killed me. He's very extroverted and he really needs people. My dad is very dependent on, you know, human energy in a way that I kind of never have been. And so I just, you know, I would, every night was a variety show. I would do the same thing. I would say, do you want a joke? Do you want a song? Or do you want a story? And he would kind of blink for whichever one he wanted. And I was on fire. I mean, the nurses thought I was insane, singing all of Oklahoma out of tune, all of Guys and Dolls, anything, Brian Regan jokes, Patton Oswalt, John Mulaney, Shecky Green, anything. I mean, I was just showtime every night. And Andy took some video that I didn't know about, and he didn't know if I'd be mad. Of course I wasn't. In fact, I was grateful, and I have it if you want to see it. But it was actually just audio.
Well, were you in the bathroom?
I do want to. I do want to.
If not, we're good.
No, honestly, it was such an unflattering angle of my fat back that is just audio. But I put some pictures with it, and it's very short. It's like 30 seconds. This is how I said goodnight to him every night on FaceTime.
Of dawn and dew, there was love all around, but I never heard it singing. No, I never heard it at all till there was you. I love you, Steve Grad. I hope you're sleeping well. You're the best. Everybody loves Steve Grad.
That was very touching. He was 71. Did I get that? Or I missed the birthday.
Shy.
Just shy of 71.
Yeah, and I wasn't going to include a picture of him sick because I've been very guarded about his dignity. You know, he's not, I wouldn't say vain, but very like proud. I'm like, I didn't want to, but you know what? It's like, it's part of the story now. It's part of what happened. And I had to see it every day up close.
What was the diagnosis? What did he have?
Long story short, yeah, I can get, I mean, it's a lot. I will give you the short version. In 2019, and that last picture was from two summers ago. So this was fast.
Mm-hmm.
He was just tired and he's a jogger. He jogs like 20 miles a day. You got to peel him off the ceiling. I got to tell dad, I got to go to bed. Got to get off the phone. Just high energy. And he was just tired. And at one point he was like, I pull into the driveway. I can't even get out of the car. So we had to figure out what in the hell was going on. Found out he had hairy cell leukemia, which is what Vinny had.
Hmm.
And but he said it was no big deal. And the oncologist was like, we'll knock this out. No problem. And they did. They said, we're just going to put a chemo port in for 2 weeks. By Thanksgiving, it'll be like it never happened. Well, with his very compromised immune system in the chemo port, he got a very, very deadly virus that we all may have, and it might be passing through us, but we don't have a compromised immune system. So he got a very deadly virus. Nobody knew about it. While he was sort of comatose, he had a series of strokes, and it was just downhill from there. There was a long time where he was in the hospital and I would come in and he didn't know who I was. So I put up a lot of pictures, 8x10s, I mean, Walgreens and Kinko's, that I was losing my mind. And I mean, just floor to ceiling pictures of the family, because I wanted him to, first of all, those walls are depressing. Mm-hmm. And second of all, I just needed him to see if it could jar anything. And he didn't know who I was, which was fucking horrific. But then he started like kind of saying, like, yeah. But before I got excited, I realized, oh, he knows I'm the girl that comes in every day. He doesn't have a connection. So finally,
he's a yes and guy.
Yes.
Brownlee.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because my parents met doing improv at Southern Illinois University.
Oh, shit.
And Teresa.
Salukis.
Yeah, go Salukis. And right. Teresa, of course, said the funniest thing today. She says, do you take this man? And she said, yes. And.
Yes,
but they're not good improv. They weren't good improvisers, but they did meet doing improv. And so it's been there's a relief in people knowing, because this has been exhausting and terrifying. And there's still tons of things that you don't even want to know with the family and the, you know, the estate and the problems and the terror that I have endured. And there's a relief that I know obviously he has, and there's a relief I have, but I'm so fucking sad. And so the next day I have to find a cemetery, which I did, a gorgeous Jewish cemetery out in the middle of nowhere. And then you have to do all this other stuff. And by the way, just so everyone knows, there is no payment plan. You pay up front. I did not know that. That's my friend Becky put up this funeral fund for me, which I was very ashamed about. But she's like, who cares? In Asian, because she's Chinese. Asians, you just bring cash to funerals. Everybody knows it costs money. It's normal. The sticker shock was, it's jarring. And when there was no money from him.
I'm surprised they don't have a plan, like for something as expensive as funerals can be. You know, I mean, it seems like almost everything over $1,500, they'll give you a plan on.
No plan these days.
It seems
like a top shelf.
Yeah. No, I really didn't, though, because that was, you know, I got the biggest compliment from my fiance. He said, I've never seen anyone in this position make so many good decisions. And I really appreciated that, because, you know, you got to do what you got to do for people who can't do it for themselves. But also, I had this feeling right after, you know, the next day, like, I know this is a cottage industry that preys on the grieving. I'm not going to let them get me. I don't have the money to, you know, to fall for this shit. So I was already kind of ready. And thank God, Jewish funerals, you're buried very simply. There's no Cadillac coffin. You go in.
No sarcophagus?
No.
Yeah.
No. So it's, you know, you pay a little extra for the tallis and the yarmulke and maybe to have a shomer watch the body. But there's no sticker shock for the coffin. But the burial plots are very expensive. So within the day of putting that up, our listeners mostly covered it.
It's amazing.
Well, thank you, our listeners.
I can't believe it. I can't. I'm in shock. And I can't thank you enough. And I got a giant 100 box of thank you notes, and I'll get as many out as I can, but I can't thank you enough.
Hand me mine at the studio.
Okay.
Save the 49 cents.
The only other thing I was going to tell you was what I put in his coffin.
Oh yeah. I don't know if I'm
supposed to do that, but I did ask the funeral director to step out because I didn't want to get in trouble. So in Jewish burials, there's no viewing. But somebody does have to ID the body. And of course, at this point, why wouldn't it be me? And we had a little COVID protocol safe burial outside at the gravesite. It was beautiful. And I played, I was terrified to write a eulogy. And I got lucky, because being in this industry, I had so much great audio of me and my dad. And on Mark in the Morning, one year I wrote him a letter for Father's Day. And he's on it, and we're laughing and we're crying, and I got to play that, and I didn't have to do anything. So I was very lucky. But she asked, you know, she goes, do you want me to step out? And I said, oh, yes. And I'm kind of concealing this bag. So you know, they open the top. He looks much better than he did the last time I saw him. And shaved and yarmulke and tallis and the white robe that you wear for a Jewish funeral. And so I brought all the pictures from the hospital because those were the family that was surrounding him when we couldn't get in.
The ones and you put up on the wall.
Yes. So I placed them all around him. I put in his favorite t-shirt, my Pretty Good Podcast t-shirt that he wore all the time because that was my old podcast and he was so proud. I think his Israeli Defense Force shirt because he's real into Israel. We had to sing the Israeli National Anthem at the funeral. That was his request. His Black Hawks blanket. And I got a transistor radio and I put really top shelf batteries in it with an earbud. And I changed it. I tuned it to ESPN radio. And there was a
reception
on.
6 feet underground.
So that'll be on for hopefully a long time because it got good batteries. And I was going to not have an earbud, but I didn't want to scare the groundskeepers. So I put the earbud in his ear and he can have the games until it runs out. And just on that note, really quickly, he was a savant when it came to stats, football stats, baseball, everything. When he jogged every day, he would speak out loud while he jogged doing baseball stats over and over and over. And this was very common. And he always did the legal at the end of a Major League Baseball game just to be funny. And one time I caught it. And this gives you a very good idea of my dad and the kind of person he was. And I think Kalen has it. This was very common for us.
This telecast is authorized on the express written consent of Major League Baseball. Any publication, rebroadcast, or other use of the descriptions and accounts of this game without the express written consent of Major League Baseball is prohibited. Crest is able to get rid of cavities 43% more than other toothpaste. The American Dental Association says Crest is an oral dentifrice that will clear cavities and keep your mouth fresh and clean. Use Crest.
Wow.
So that was kind of our relationship, and yeah.
Well, look, always tell people when somebody leaves us, there's especially a parent or any loved one, you know, there's always a range. You know, there's the range. There's some people that never met their biological dad, and then there's the people that knew them until they were six and they died in Vietnam or a car accident or something. Then there's the dad that's in jail or whatever it is, and then there's the ones that died your first year of college and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, if you look at that spectrum, what you got with your dad, the years you had with your dad, the life you had with your dad, not to mention the relationship you had with your dad. Some people don't have a relationship with their dad and they're still here. But if you just took a look at that scale, you'd be way toward the right. You know, you'd be especially, you know, there should be kind of an algorithm as I think about it. And the algorithm should be how long your parent lived, because at almost 70, that's a little bit younger. But the algorithm should be how long were they on the planet? And then the other factor, the other equation that should be factored in is what kind of relationship? How often did you see him? How many laughs did you have? How many ball games did you go to? How many road trips? How many vacations? How much sharing of all the potpourri of life did you have with them? And when you take those two numbers and you combine them, then you're in like the top one percentile.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
And you know, and given that it's inevitable, everyone's parents are going to die at some point, I would definitely say through my elaborate scoring system that you are on the high end of this equation. So
I agree. And just to be, you know, fair and sort of three-dimensional, we didn't have a perfect relationship and he wasn't a perfect dad and he was it was fraught. But
Well, let me adjust the score then.
Well, no, but I'm
going to bring you down a couple of notches.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. You know, when I told you before, when I started therapy as an adult, the thing he said to me as I was walking to the office was, don't protect me. And, you know, he got it. He got that he was a little quick to a temper sometimes or, you know, whatever. But our joke, which always freaked out the nurses, was before, you know, every time I would get on FaceTime with him and he, because I knew it would make him laugh, I'd say, well, Dad, you know, your biggest mistake as a parent, you know what you did and you know I'll never forgive you. And the nurses get all weird, but it's a joke. And I say, you know what you did. You spared the rod. And I always point at myself and go, so you spoiled the child. Look, because my dad loves saying, spare the rod, spoil the child, because he never hit us and he thought it was funny. He said, look at this spoiled child you have to deal with. And it always made him laugh. And Brian, I'm glad you asked me on Twitter because people want to know if there's excess money, which it already looks like there is. And I can't believe it. What I'm going to do with it. And he is very Jewish. And I wanted to give some to the Jewish Family Services.
Barbados!
But also, yes, he wanted his burial in Barbados and in Atoll. But I'd like to set up eventually, my plan is to set up a broadcasting scholarship in his name. So that's my next plan. So if anyone has any experience with that, can you get in touch? Because I don't know how this works, but that's the plan.
What about $22,500
and
went right over the 18. All right. Well, we're glad to have you back, Gina. Sorry you had to go through it, but we're glad to have you back.
I'm really glad to be here.
All right, should we do, let's do March Madness now, and then we'll bring Fitz Dog in after we're done.
It's time again for the Big Rants. As we rank the rage in March Madness. Yesterday in the California Conference, the LA Department of Building and Safety had their plans checked by Gavin Newsom. In the Classics Conference, Sonny's helmet got washed out of the tournament by unrinsed coffee mugs. And in the Big Government Conference, Ilhan Omar became a refugee from the tournament after losing in a maximum way to minimum wage. Let's get into the penultimate three matchups in the final round. First up, a matchup from the Pop Culture Conference that may lead Adam to openly weep in front of his daughter. It's Alyssa Milano versus the Beastie Boys.
Oh. Alyssa Milano, what happened to the little cherub that delighted America with Who's the Boss all throughout the 80s and into the early 90s? Oh, how the march toward menopause can change a woman's molecular structure in her brain. I gotta say, I don't wish any ill will toward Melissa Milano, so I'm gonna word this in a very deconstructive, I'm gonna reverse engineer this. I do not wish Alyssa Milano died on her 18th birthday so I could remember her the way she was. I wish I had died on Alyssa's 18th birthday so I wouldn't have to fucking see the horrible version of a complaining shrew that she's turned into. We get it. You weep. You weep for the children on the border. You weep for the children of India. You weep for the children in Africa. You weep for gun control. You weep for legislation. You weep for systemic racism. What kind of hopper do you have for tears? What do? Drag around a fucking fish tank filled with salty water so that you can weep for every humanity? How about you weep for the Ace Man who's tired of watching you weep? Suck it up and get back to it. And let's not forget, I'm the boss.
Wow.
All right. Moving. Beastie Boys, I do this with a heavy heart because of Bald Brian over here, who just out of the frame, you can see a Beastie Boys poster in the background of his kitchen. The Beastie Boys are what you do when you can't do shit musically. Now, nobody's done more with less, except for there is a new sheriff in town. His name is DJ Khaled, which is he didn't even eventually learn to play anything. The Beastie Boys, and again, my beef with the Beastie Boys is not the Beastie Boys. The Beastie Boys did everything they needed to do so that we would know their name today. My beef is with everyone who loves the Beastie Boys. Bad rappers, bad players, bad singers, bad citizens, bad neighbors, bad children, bad fathers, bad sons, bad co who I wish I was listening to instead of the fucking Beastie Boys, because they could play their goddamn instruments. And all you defenders, don't give me the, hey, in their fifth record, somebody learned to play a bass guitar. Well, I'll tell John Popper and all the other people who have mastered their instruments. Hold the phone. The Beastie Boys have learned to play.
Oh, Dina, here's how we do this.
Oh, this is going to be tough.
Well, I'm going to leave my personal feelings out of this as much as I can. Sure. and say I think this is a first-round blowout. I think his Alyssa Milano rant was succinct and inspired.
Yeah, I get it. I hear you. I did really appreciate the part where he highlighted over and over again that they can't play their instruments and we're not impressed if they eventually learn to play an instrument. But wishing death upon himself,
that was good.
I think, is unmatched in the madness department.
It's a true story.
Yeah. Alyssa moves on.
All right, Alyssa moves on.
Next up, we go to the California Conference for a battle in Los Angeles. Mayor Garcetti going up against the LAX TSA.
Oh, wow.
Garcetti. Garcetti, you sound like a paisan. Where are your fucking huevos, bitch? This guy is the chicken. Gretchen Whitmore is less a fucking chick than Mayor Garcetti is in terms of folks running the government. This guy's such a bitch. He sits there, he weeps whenever there's a prisoner let out. Some of his greatest hits are like, when these people are let out of prison and they're paroled, we owe them a debt of gratitude. Oh, really? Tell that to the fucking old woman that bitch put a shank in her fucking neck 3 years ago. Whose fucking gratitude are we talking about? And by the way, I'm no longer going to walk when it's raining outside. I'm just going to pass through all the homeless people's tents so I don't get wet anymore. Because it is now, it's like we have filled in. There are more tents on sidewalks than there are actually open sidewalks in this godforsaken city. You've been fucking running into the ground. Now, I don't know what's in it for you, and I'm not sure what your plans are, but please step aside and let anyone run Los Angeles. As a matter of fact, if you just picked up a fucking lawn dart and threw it towards Sylmar, I would take anyone who had the lawn dart sticking out of their fucking chest before I had you run this goddamn city. And in a world where everyone desecrates everything, Donald Trump's star didn't last 10 minutes on Hollywood Boulevard. Could some brave Los Angelino, nay, American, show up to LAX with a goddamn can of spray paint and fucking just draw a mustache and an arrow through the head of Garcetti on that big fucking mural of him sitting in a kayak in the middle of LA River? By the way, he's welcoming us to LA. Let's get a more accurate depiction of LA to greet us. Because if you walk into LAX as you're heading out to get onto your Uber, you would think this is a paradise filled with whitewater rafting and world-class fishing. No, it is not. Show a fucking picture of Garcetti standing there with his pants around his ankles, his thumb in his mouth, and being held up on the shoulders of a homeless family. What was the other one? Oh, LAX TSA. Oh, fucking LAX TSA. This is what happens when people can't get fired from their jobs. They start adopting attitudes, and those attitudes are never helpful, and they're never good. When is the last time somebody said, thank you, have a safe flight, come again, enjoy yourself? The LAX TSA, first off, worst job at the airport is the one who looks at your license right when you walk in, because the first thing you have to do is pull your mask down around your ankles. So that person, who evidently everyone is freaked out by COVID, every single human being that person sees drops their mask and gives them 20. Fucking drop the attitude when you drop the fucking mask. And the notion that you get to, first off, you're all morbidly obese. I don't know what's going on. I would be weighing your fucking ass in like I was a fight promoter. You guys just sit around. I think you drink and eat everything you make me throw out of my fucking bag. And could we give you guys a little lesson in math and civics? If the toothpaste says 4 ounces on it and 3/4 of it has already been used, then that's not four ounces of toothpaste. That's 1 1/4 ounces of toothpaste. But step it up. And you know what we need to do? We need to shit can one of these guys every once in a while for their fucking shit attitude, because it's what happens when people think they're fireproof.
Oof. That was a first round blood match.
I have thoughts. Brian, you want to go ahead?
I'm leaning towards Garcetti, but those are both very inspired rants.
Yeah, I think, first of all, who knows better right now than Adam what's going on at LAX, because he's flying. He knows, you know, nobody knows the airport system right now as it is better than Adam. But I can't shake the image of Garcetti with his pants down and his
ankles,
thumb in his mouth, being carried by a homeless person. For me, it goes to Garcetti.
Garcetti it is.
Garcetti it is.
Find the full bracket at AdamCarolla.com and make sure to tune in tomorrow for more of the Big Rants. March Madness, Madness.
All right. Fitzdog is waiting for us. I'll hit a spot and then we'll bring the Fitzdog in. Super Specioso. That's what I want to talk about. Having a tough day, having a tough week, having a tough year. I got something that'll take the edge off. Kratom. It's one of a kind, all natural, super leaf, works with your body, keeps you calm, keeps you focused, keeps you energized. I have a cup of Kratom before every workout. It's good for your muscles. It's a cousin of the coffee plant that grows in Southeast Asia, used by villagers for over 100 years. Super Specioso offers the highest quality Kratom at the lowest possible price, plus a 20% discount for my fans when you use the code Adam at checkout. So go to getsuperleaf.com/Adam. Get your 20% off. That's getsuperleaf.com/Adam. I was just drinking some of this before I came in. It is good stuff. Right, Dawson?
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or illness.
All right, we'll talk to Fitzdog, and we'll do that right after this.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Staten Island, New York. 10 individuals were arrested while hauling a load of fireworks. And 3 dead alligators! Definitely not a Jew!
Fitzdog, Greg Fitzsimmons is joining us. He's got live dates coming up all over the place in Raleigh and Philadelphia and Kansas City. Gina Grad.
Nice.
And you can find out about all the tickets coming up all through, tonight through tomorrow night in Raleigh, North Carolina at Good Nights. And then for all the other ones, just go to Fitzdog with a Z, Fitzdog.com. Good to see you, Fitzdog.
How you doing, Adam? Good to see you. Bob, Brian.
Hey.
Gina, my condolences. I'm sorry about your dad passing. I went through that. I know it's tough, but... How was the whole process going back?
I'm so glad to be here. You have no idea.
Yeah,
I get 2 hours to kick it with you guys. This is great.
Yeah,
I'll go back to dealing with if there's any estate paperwork after this.
Fitzdog, how big a fan were you of your dad? Because I know I've heard a lot of stories, but it sounds mixed.
It was mixed. I mean, I always say, you know, my father beat me. But he beat me just right. Like, I can remember the last time he kicked the shit out of me just being like, perfect. Yeah. You know, he really nailed
struck
it.
Struck the right tone.
Just the right tone. I think any more would have been barbaric. And any less, I wouldn't be on a Zoom call with some of the top people in podcasting today right now.
Wow. That's a very philosophical way to look at it.
Wow.
It is weird when you have kids and you think about beating kids, it sounds insane. Like, if I tried to beat my kids, they would be unhappy, but they would mostly be confused, right? Like, I don't think they'd even, I don't think they could find a context for it.
Well, it's confusing because up until that moment, you were and are responsible for their life and death. You feed them, you shelter them, you care for them, and then all of a sudden, you're purposefully harming them. And that's very confusing for a kid. And like, I remember seeing, before the pandemic, I was in the Century City Mall, and I saw this kid, and, you know, first of all, don't give your kid a 64-ounce Coke and a snow cone at the mall yeah. and then expect them to behave. So this kid is like a pinball running around, and then she grabs him, and she starts spanking the shit out of him, but she's screaming, relax, relax.
Yeah. I see mixed a dominatrix message. In his future.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah,
nothing more soothing.
I don't even discipline my kids in any way, shape, or form. I'm just too fucking lazy to even. I haven't even grounded them or given them a timeout. Like I'm the world's laziest parent.
Well, they'll keep you busy later then.
Yeah, I'm sure
you'll have to kick in when they're teenagers. But
reaping the rewards.
Yeah,
the worst thing is like I used to wrestle with my son a lot, and he was always a jock. And we'd have good wrestling matches. Like, I would always win, but I would trash talk and I would sucker punch, whatever it took. And then he got to a certain age, probably about 19, where I started to notice him pulling back. Like, he had me, and he couldn't pull the Oedipal trigger and go all the way with it.
Good.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's funny. My son is not a jock at all. And then my daughter turned out to be the jock. You can't plan anything. You can't work it out. You know, I had this whole plan about everything I learned. I learned playing Pop Warner football. My son's going to play Pop Warner football, and he's going to learn all those valuable lessons that I learned out on the playing and practice field. He's learned no lessons and has no interest in playing football.
What's his passion?
He likes the dog. he likes his stuffies at the at the ripe old age of 14.
Ben Shapiro.
Carlson. He likes Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson.
He's a normal 14-year-old.
He's a little kind of Alex P. Keaton. Like he's a Republican who's very conservative. He likes comedy. He likes informing me that I'm nowhere near his top 10 funniest people. We had this interesting conversation the other day where he was explaining to me that I'm good at a lot of things, but not great at anything.
Wow, yeah. Jack of all trades.
Yeah, master of none.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing when they think they're the authority at a certain age on what's cool and what's not. And I just want to say, I sit down with my kids, we sit around the table and they try to pull that thing. And I just want to go, you don't know me, motherfucker. you don't know how cool I was. You're not cool. What do you, look at you. You ride you wear a helmet when you ride a bicycle.
Right.
You're a pussy.
Yeah.
They'll show you.
I was trying to teach him to ride the unicycle the other day, but he got sort of halfway into it. You know, the problem as I realize is if you would like to learn to ride the unicycle, or you would like to learn to play an instrument or another language, or just a skill, like as a young person, you might want to learn how to crochet or something like that, or how to build something, a birdhouse in the garage or something. We could focus all our attention on something like that because there was no alternatives. There was no place to go. There was nothing to do. I learned to ride the unicycle because I went with my dad to his girlfriend's house. Her son had a unicycle in his room. He wasn't around. I found it. And I just spent 7 hours out in the street hanging onto a Buick fender trying to teach myself to ride a unicycle. But if I had video games and Grubhub and YouPorn, I don't think I would have ever put that kind of time in. I don't think John Popper would know how to play the harmonica if he had YouPorn and Grubhub and a cable with 7,000 stations on it and YouTube, right? I mean, we just had so much time.
There's going to be a real deficit of jugglers in 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, all those things, even playing a guitar, just sitting down. My son, he plays guitar, but he's never played an entire song in his life. He took lessons for years, and he can play the hook, and then that's it. And I just think, look, man, you go to college and you pull out an acoustic guitar in a dorm room with a bunch of chicks there,
it's over.
You're the guy.
Right.
Not if you play 5 seconds of the song, you got to play the whole song.
Yeah, that's a very interesting kind of metaphor for what I'm talking about, which is within the song, there's just the hook and you just want to learn that part because there's so many distractions. And I don't know if they all have sort of attention deficit disorder, but there are so many screens, so much to look at and so many directions to go. Like I'll find myself, I was watching, my son and I watched Under Siege with Steven Seagal the other night. And we're sitting down in this movie theater room that I built because I have patience. And we're sitting there in our reclining leather seats with the cup holders. And we're in front of a 14-foot screen. And during the action sequences in Under Siege, I can see my son sneaking peeks at his phone.
Yeah.
Like we wanted to see what the Clipper score was. He wanted to look at a 3-inch screen during a 270-inch screen in front of him with full surround sound. Like, could you imagine when you were a kid, like sitting in your own movie theater watching a Steven Seagal movie and going, well, let me just check this Hardy Boys mystery book. Like, I just want to look at a couple pages. I mean, it's unthinkable, but how could it go any other way? It can't go any other way, right?
Right. And then you start getting into giving everybody Ritalin because they're distracted. And it's like, well, they're distracted because there's this unbelievable machine in their hand that feeds them whatever they want, anytime they want it. Short of porn, which they can't watch while you're around, they can watch exactly what they want to watch. And, you know, I see what it's done to me. I watch TikTok. I'm on fucking TikTok 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
And what do you watch?
Quick little snippets. It's addictive.
I think Drew got addicted to TikTok, too.
Oh, boy.
What are you looking at on TikTok? Like, how does it work? I've never been to TikTok.
Well, it's almost like America's Funniest Home Videos, but it has learned your brain. And so it knows the clips, and it's the best. Literally, I think the clips, they can't be longer than 30 seconds.
No.
And so it's the absolute meat of whatever they want to show you. Accidents, I like seeing people on unicycles getting hit by cement trucks. I like to see fat chicks on a rope swing going into
the
lake,
best.
But they fall into the mud on the way down. Yep.
Yeah, that's good.
They slide the rest of the way down.
They slide on their face the rest of the way down. And the best is if there's laughing. And then, you know, big titty girls in bikinis. I there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you know, Rickles. I went down a rabbit hole. Like, if you find a good Rickles clip, then you right swipe. And then the person that curated that clip, you can see all of their clips. And a lot of times then they have 20 other Rickles clips.
Mm. Well, you know, it's weird. So I do this thing where I go, I don't want to waste my life. I don't want to go down that wormhole. I don't want to spend my time looking at other people's lives and videos and, you know, stuff that doesn't make me money or doesn't make me happy. But I will watch 3 episodes of Starsky and Hutch, like back to back to back.
Sure.
So,
well, that makes you happy.
Yeah, it's just a lower grade sort of version of TikTok. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it does. It's kind of interesting. Maybe there should be some sort of 70s cop show therapy for these kids because they're so slow. They're so plotting. Nothing really goes on. There's no special effects. You know, there's a beginning where somebody's been abducted, and then there's the part where Starsky and Hutch say they need to be on the job, and their commanding officer pushes back, but they explain to them why they need to be on the job. And it just plots. Then they go to Huggy Bear's bar and he gives them some information because he's heard a few things. Then they get in the car. The most exciting thing about Starsky and Hutch is them peeling out in a car. It's literally just them lighting up the rear tires and taking off. But maybe we could take our kids' metronomes and slow them down significantly by just forcing them to watch 70s cop shows where nothing happened.
Speaking of checking the scores and patience, you reminded me, you guys ever experienced this, Gina? You must have experienced this with your dad. 15% of my youth was my dad asking me to go into the living room because they were doing dinner or something and saying, hey, wait till they flash the score of the Warriors game and tell me what it is, because they didn't have the little box in the corner. Right. You know what I mean? So it was tell me the score of the game. So I'd wait for 8 minutes or whatever it took to flash the score and then report back. Did you guys have to do that?
No, my dad didn't do things, you know.
I imagine your dad probably wasn't concerned about the score of the game as much.
Also, much of my life, I don't think we had a other room to walk into. There was just the room. That was the room. We ate in that room. The TV was in that room. That was just the room.
We used to watch TV every night, and my father, who was 6'2", we had a couch and then a chair, and then my father would come in and we'd all watch 60 Minutes or we'd watch Rockford Files or Kojak, and my father would lay down the length of the couch and we all sat on the floor. The hardest
floor. Oh, that's a power move.
That's the king.
Yes. And there was one TV. You didn't have any option. I didn't want to watch Kojak.
I just thought of something that happened last night that would think about how far away this would be from our childhood. I was sitting in my office watching Love Boat at 9:30, and my daughter walked in, and every facet of this story would not work with our childhood. My daughter walked in. She's got one of these teeth whitening devices in her mouth that's like the ultraviolet light.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it looks like a battery with a mouthpiece attached to it. And there looks to be some light that is, when you get your teeth whitened, they got to hit you with the ultraviolet light. So it's a home.
Looks like the football mouth guard that's not connected to the face mask, right?
That's
like
lit up.
It's the mouthpiece with what looks like an old school phone battery or something like attached to it. It's basically like if you took a football mouthpiece, glued it to a pack of cigarettes and painted it white, that's essentially what it would look like. So first thing, my parents would have never sprang for anything that had to do with us or teeth or whitening or, you know, I couldn't get a fucking retainer or parents or any of that. Number one. Number two, she stands in my office and she looks at me and then she holds her phone up, and in the computer voice that comes from the phone, the one, I don't know, Marley Matlin probably uses this when she orders food or something, you know, like it's some program, some app on the phone. And she goes, can we go to the condo in Malibu in computer voice on Saturday with me and my friends?
Can we go to the condo in Malibu with me and my friends?
Right. Siri asked you.
I must say, I kind of preferred it to her own voice. I got to be honest. I was like, oh, can we do this all the time? So I said, yes, I will take you and your friends to Malibu for the day on Saturday. And she just nodded and turned around. I don't know if the thing has a fucking thank you button or I'm proud of you, Papa.
Clearly not.
Evidently not. But
off, old man.
Right. But I thought, like, what part of that would resemble any part of our childhood?
I got nothing. That's
living in the future.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, having a second house. I mean, we were second homeless as kids. We didn't have that second home. It was very difficult.
Same. Well, I don't want to be a one downer, but I did live in a second house, but it was my grandmother's second house that she let us flop in because my dad and my mom couldn't get their financial shit together enough to purchase and or rent their own home. So there was a second house involved. But the problem with the second house is it sounds kind of, you know, when you're living in the free house, like mama's second free house, it sounds financially prudent. You know, it sounds like, hey, we can't afford a house, and maybe we could live in a little shitty apartment in Van Nuys, but we get a house in Valley Village. But here's the problem with the free house. The problem with the free house is the person that owns it won't do anything as far as maintenance or upgrades or anything on the house, because they're like, fuck you. We bought this house to rent it out to winners, and we have our loser daughter flopping in here waiting to die. So we're losing money on this. So the person that owns the house is not going to put a coat of paint or even change a light bulb. The person that lives in the house is also not going to do anything for the house because it's not their house. Who would pay for a new roof on a house that wasn't yours? And then why would the person that owned the house pay 10 grand for a new roof, even though we needed a new roof my entire childhood? And then there's a weird vitriol part of the whole thing. Like, there's a psychological, emotional part about it, because the person that owns the house is pissed that the person that's living in the house lives there for free and still has a shitty attitude about them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They can't fucking stand that. And then if the person that owns the house starts asking for some rent, then the kid who basically just goes, hey, I'm damaged goods. You're the one who fucked me up. That's why I can't afford an apartment. Then they get irate about the person wanting rent from them after psychologically scarring them. It is the worst. It is lose fucking lose.
Yeah, my wife had her parents split up, and the they had a second apartment when they split up. You know, the second wife had a place that opened up, and so they let Aaron stay there. It was on the Upper West Side in New York, and it was great. It was a 3-bedroom apartment, terrific. She was there with her 2 stepbrothers. Except then the new wife would just occasionally. She was a hippie. She was like a real hippie, like down in Nicaragua with the freedom fighters, and like went to Castro, and it went to Cuba, new Castro. So like a Cuban bongo player would just show up one day expecting to crash for 3 weeks, possibly wanted by the law, definitely has his own wok and is making weird Cuban food. And you can't say anything. You just got to let this guy live in the living room. And then a second guy shows up, you're hiding your wallet. So yeah, you don't want the privileges that the owner gets on the place you're living.
Yeah. You know, we all kind of have this, we long for free shit. Like, we think free shit is good. We're all kind of internally wired for free shit, but it doesn't work out most of the time. It doesn't. And like, I will tell people if I'm asking them to do something or help me with something, like sometimes you'll say to somebody like, could you edit this shit together for me or something? And they'll go, yeah, no problem. I'll buff you out. I'll handle it. I go, I want to pay you. And they go, no, I'll do it for free. I'll do it for free. And I go, no, I want to pay you because I want to tell you what to do, when to do it. And I don't want to talk to you in 3 weeks and go, you know, hey man, I'm really slammed, but I'll get around to it. Like, free isn't free, I guess is
as the great Charlie Sheen once said, you don't pay a prostitute to come over, you pay her to leave.
That's right. We got someone who wants to express their appreciation for Fitzdog's humor. We got someone else who wants to welcome back Gina Grad and talk to me about playing shows in Kansas City. I'll tell you what, let me hit a spot. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back. We'll take those calls. First, let me hit Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, unless you're my mom. You want a bundle? Good. Get your homeowners or renters policy and put it together with your automotive policy. It's a good thing too, because you have so much to do around the house already. So just go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save. Geico makes it that easy to save at Geico. That is geico.com. All right, we'll take a quick break, come back with some calls and Fitzdog right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there, owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.